Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I think I'm actually a bit hungover, but not from last night, because basically we went away. We have had the nicest half term I reckon we've ever had, actually. And as a family, we had 5 days away. We went on Wednesday. We went to stay down in East Sussex with my sister, and the kids absolutely adore her. I haven't seen her for ages. Then we went to stay with another set of friends, and then we went to the beach and stayed at a beach house. And Dozza and I just had this really wonderful, amazing time with the kids and with our friends and drinking. And it just felt like the Costa del Cambasans. Do you know what I mean? We were just there, like sun hats on and burnt noses. And it was wonderful.
Just lovely. Oh, do you know what? We've said this, haven't we? I get now why when you're a parent, it's so much better to go on like a group holiday or holidays with other people. Like the more adults you've got and the more kids, like the easier the parenting is, because they just kind of, I don't know, get on with it themselves, don't they? Like, you can just sit there.
We've got one set of friends, and she's an absolute hero, and she basically got up with the kids every morning, and because she's not really a big drinker, and she was like, oh no, it's fine, go back to bed. And I was like, somebody's telling me to go back to bed.
Oh my God. I did.
I didn't feel guilty about it. So
can anyone hire her out for their holidays?
How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. We didn't go away. I had a night on my own with one of my mates in the hotel in London, which was lovely.
I saw that. What a treat.
Yeah, it was really nice. Like, the thing is, she lives in Saudi, and whenever she comes back, we always do stuff together, you know, like as a family. It's always like family. But we've realised we never get to just be by ourselves because she's obviously back like so rarely that when we, you know, we want to do stuff with the kids and we want to, see each other's kids. But it was a real treat. Like, we had secret sparring to do facials. And then we were actually planning on just getting room service. So we hadn't brought like our makeup bags with us or, you know, like anything like
what?
That. And then we ended up having to go and sit in Nobu, like with no makeup on and just like the dresses that we'd had on all day. But it was fine. Like, you know, when you think, oh, actually, I don't care. It doesn't matter.
No, do you know what? I feel like that's as a result of lockdown, by the way, because I am so much less maintenance than I used to be. Like, I was having a discussion with somebody else about this the other day, saying, you know, I wouldn't have dreamed of going out without, like, you know, full eye makeup and like liquid eyeliner. And my, like, you know, that's just what I did. That was almost like my uniform. And now, if I've got a bit of mascara, lip gloss, and some blusher on, I'm not really that bothered. I mean, it doesn't matter.
No, I know. It's really weird. And even like we were looking at people like really dressed up and we were like, God, that's weird. It's like Wednesday night. What? We were sitting in the dark as well. Can't see anything.
The thing is, I don't know if you noticed this as well, that I really feel like there's like a new like lust for life. Like I realize that this pandemic is not over, you know, we don't know. You've got to like think about the sort of the nightclub industry, and obviously theaters are starting to get back to some sort of normality now. Obviously people have lost loved ones, so yes, okay, there is an element of like, oh, there's freedom and stuff, but I think people are just genuinely feeling happy again. There is like an element of hope and things are returning to normal and we can see our friends. And I've just got this reinvigoration of like, I love being around the people that I love, and it's filling me up with joy.
And also as well, like, I think it's kind of hit the reset button on all the stuff we used to do with the kids. Like we've said before, like we used to feel like you had to take them to all these amazing places all the time, fill the half term with like loads of activities. When actually, when it comes down to it, all we've done pretty much in the last week is go to people's houses, sit in the garden, have a couple of drinks, kids are playing in the paddling pool, on the trampoline, and it's been so lovely. So easy, no stress. Like it is, it's just, yeah, I think it's hit reset on all those things that we felt like we had to do.
Yeah, and we were going to book a farm the other day, like a farm visit. You know, I was like, oh, we've got to do something the first couple of days of half term. And I went through the whole process and was like, you know, three kids and there was going to be three adults. And it came to 80 quid. And at the checkout, I said to Doz, it's 80 quid, Doz. And I was like, I'm not doing it. And we just didn't do it. We just went to the park instead and had a picnic. And I'm not being stingy. I'm just not going to pay 80 quid to go and see some animals now. I'm just going to walk out in the field and hope I see a cow.
It's so true. I know it's, and I mean, it's bad, I guess, in some ways. Like the kids are, well, no, they don't know what they're missing out on, do they?
No.
And they're more than happy. So, but yeah, also, let's just crack on as well.
Money just doesn't equate to having a good time. And no, I think that's what we're saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is a very, very, very exciting conversation. Obviously, this month is Pride Month. Here at Made by Mamas, we are massive supporters of the LGBTQ+ community. So we really wanted to get a female voices on, a gay couple who've been together for a very long time, who are very well known in that space, and who are currently on an incredible journey with... you know, with having a baby, with their pregnancy journey. It's really interesting story, isn't it?
It is. We love to hear, you know, all routes to becoming a parent. And this one is particularly special. So we think you're really going to enjoy it. Today, we are chatting to Rose and Rosie.
Okay, joining us on the podcast today, what a moment this is. I'm so looking forward to this conversation. Rose and Rosie, they're known for their relatable and kind of, I guess, comic take on being a same-sex couple trying to conceive. They are the most successful YouTubers, same-sex YouTubers in the UK, 1.6 million YouTube subscribers. I know, take a moment, George. I'm glad you're sitting down. They have real and honest conversations about LGBTQ+ issues, and they're just oversharers that we cannot wait to talk to.
Our favourite type of people.
It's Rose and Rosie. Hello, welcome.
Hello. Oh, hi. Thank you guys for having us. How exciting.
Thank you so much for coming on. And like for those people who don't know about you guys, I'm sure they will, but can you just give us a brief on how you met and how you when you decided to start the YouTube channel?
Yes, my God, so long ago now. It was actually 10 years ago we met, wasn't it, Rosie?
Yeah, 10 years
ago. Now, we met through a mutual friend who we happened to both actually date, but not at the same time.
It's fine.
And I knew Rosie through that person. And I actually invited myself, dare I say, gatecrashed, a Halloween party of yours, didn't I? Yeah. And you had a boyfriend at the time. How problematic.
That's brilliant.
I know. And I went dressed as a ghost. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to invite myself. I'll have no other opportunity to meet this girl. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to be brave. And that's very unlike me. I'm quite shy, actually, believe it or not. And it was quite forward, wasn't it, Rosie?
It was really forward.
Really forward. And then after that, we kind of like met and whatever.
We both had partners for a bit. And then we both broke up with our partners at the same time.
Yeah.
And I was really worried that Rose was going to get back with her ex. And I was like, no. I have to go out with Rose before, I have to at least go on one date before they get back together.
So technically we were each other's rebounds, but it worked out. Yeah. And we were both at university at the time. And I was doing film and screen media. And as one of the modules, we were told to kind of experiment with video and see if we could get a viral video on YouTube. This is before, you know, YouTube was a way to make money.
Yeah, before really, influencers.
Yeah, there were no real kind of personalities. It was more of like a viral space, like
it
Charlie
was like,
Bit My Finger.
Yeah, Charlie Bit My Finger. Lots of cats
lots
online.
Of cats, music yeah. videos. So it was very different to how it is now. And I think in a certain respect, we were quite lucky because we started at a time where it wasn't very competitive in that sense. No one was trying to be YouTube famous. And we just did it as a hobby. And I used it as an excuse to see Rosie because we had like two people watching our videos. And I was like, Rosie, we've got to make a video again because we've got this huge audience. and it
can't
was
let them down.
A lot of it, I think, was luck, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we just kind of started dating in front of the camera, essentially. And that's why it is so organic, I guess.
What were you making the videos on? What were the first videos? What did they look like?
We literally would like go on a date and then we'd come back and turn the camera on and just talk. Yeah. And we had no like censorship around ourselves. We didn't think like, oh, we're putting ourselves on the internet and YouTube's like global. We didn't think about anything, how it would affect our lives. We didn't think about even like the fact that we were both out. We were just like, yeah, we're dating. Hi, you know.
Yeah. There was no theme to our videos.
No, we would just talk, and people started watching. And what was crazy is we didn't tag our videos. We didn't do it properly. Like we didn't know what we were doing, and somehow people started watching. But I think it was that raw, fly on the wall kind of insight that people got into a queer relationship that I think they needed.
Because we weren't talking to an audience, we were talking to each other. So it was kind of, for them, I guess it was almost kind of voyeuristic because they were having kind of like that sort of, you know, that conversation, but it was just us two speaking to each other.
Did you guys think that you were falling in love at the time, or did you think, oh, this is fun, we're just dating? Like, how are you feeling about one another at that point? And did you think it had legs?
I thought it would never last because I was 21 when we got together.
Nice.
How old were you? 23?
I was 23.
We were so young. And also, even though I knew I was bisexual from a really young age, Rose was my first proper, like, queer relationship.
Right.
So I was kind of really nervous about that as well. So I just thought, oh, you know, it will end like all relationships do, you know, I'm so young. Mm. So no, I did not think it would last.
I had more faith. I was like, of course it's gonna last. Yeah. But there we are. It's good to know we're on the same page.
Rose is like, you've done what? You've felt what? I thought we were on the same page there. Exactly. No.
And so then, obviously, your whole relationship you've kind of documented, I guess. So did you document your decision to want to have children? Or was it something you decided you'd hold back? Or just tell us a little bit about that decision.
Well, I think because everything is just like, it's sort of like manifested so authentically online, it was just the next chapter of our lives, which I think would almost be weird for us not to discuss it with our audience because they've been with us since the beginning. And unlike a lot of YouTubers, you know, our audience have actually sort of grown up with us rather than some coming, some going. They're actually kind of like the same lot, which is lovely. And I think we thought it was so important to document this, not only for those people who have been so loyal and watched our stuff for so long, but also because we didn't realize how difficult it was as a same-sex couple to start this journey until we actually started it. And it was such a shock at how limited information there was out there for same-sex couples, and such conflicting information, that we actually thought, do you know what, we should make a podcast about this as well. So we have a slightly longer form media in which to discuss this and to let people know exactly how we did it and how they can do it too. So it was a bit of a shock, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. I also think they've seen every milestone. Like, they've literally seen kind of like our third date, us getting engaged, us getting married. And yeah, I just felt like it's so important. And you know, Rose and I started dating when like gay marriage wasn't legal in the UK.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? Looking back. So it's like, I think we had to show it, you know? It's so important.
Yeah.
And we just had no idea how to do it. So
now I know.
It was a journey.
Well, that's where I really want to go with this next kind of questions, because obviously the system in this country is built towards same-sex couples having a baby. So Tell us about how you found the system once you'd made the decision as a gay couple.
Well, we've spoken about this a few times. The most shocking part, I think, was when Rosie rang up her local fertility clinic. Well, first of all, we went to our local GP and we said, how do we do it as a same-sex couple? And he said, I don't know. So we were like, excellent, thank you.
We just said, I don't know, bye.
Yeah, literally, I don't know. That was the end of the conversation. And then Rosie rang up a local fertility clinic because we thought, okay, we'll need a clinic in order to do this. And she said, look, I'm looking to inquire about IUI, which is pretty much just artificial insemination. It's not IVF, it's artificial insemination.
And it wasn't on anyone's website. That's why I rang up, because I couldn't find IUI anywhere.
That's basically when you just take the sperm, pop it in, hope for the best.
It's a bit, it's honestly like sex, IUI, but kind of with a
really,
token.
Really, really sexy, skinny
just
pet.
Putting sperm in.
Yeah, exactly.
Very thin.
Exactly. And Rosie said, you know, I'm looking to get IUI treatment. And the person on the other end of the phone said, well, you don't even know if you need it. As in, I'm assuming you're in a heterosexual relationship with fertility issues. And it's like, no, we need it. We definitely need it.
We know we need it. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was like, have you been investigated?
Yeah. And it's like, no. But there was no kind of, she just couldn't possibly believe that it would be a same-sex couple asking these questions.
And I wasn't seeing anything about same-sex on websites. So I wasn't seeing IUI as an option. Mm. I was only seeing IVF, which is a lot more pricier. The price difference is insane. So IUI is about under £1,000, I'd say. Around £900, can vary in case if you're taking like medicines and stuff.
Per insemination. Excludes the cost of the sperm. Right. So it's a very pricey situation.
But IVF is like £6,000, and there's much more to it. It's a much longer process. You know, you've got to kind of harvest your eggs.
But the whole system, you're quite right. The whole system is catered to really to heterosexual couples who have fertility issues, you know, and it was just getting this information that was proving to be so difficult until we went to like an open evening at a very LGBTQ+ friendly clinic in Brighton,
which is miles away from us, but we traveled there because that was the only place that was like really same-sex friendly and acknowledging us.
They were just fantastic. And they hosted this evening for same-sex couples and single women about how to get sperm, the process of talking to a sperm bank, and then the clinic. Because we thought that this was just like one and the same thing. We thought, we'll go to a sperm bank, we'll go to the same place to get inseminated. Yes. Easy. Yeah. But you have
it's
to
not
find,
easy.
You've got to find a sperm bank, you've got to find a clinic, you've got to make sure they talk to each other, that the clinic accepts the sperm from your sperm bank, that your sperm is UK eligible.
The different countries have different laws around sperm. So the UK have just changed it so that your sperm in the UK has to be non-anonymous.
Yes.
So that means...
Yes.
And what's really interesting about that, so that means that when your child's about like 16, if they say, Mum, I want to find out more about my donor, then you it's illegal to withhold the information. Mm-hmm. They can go to the clinic and find the information, fine. But what's interesting about that is they changed the law and none of the children are 16 yet since the law's been passed. So we don't know how it will affect the children.
Why?
That's a whole... So then we were like, but so you can use a non-anonymous
donor.
Can you use an anonymous donor?
You can if you go abroad to different countries, and it depends what the legalities are there. So some people travel, but then obviously it's already expensive. And then you've got to think, when am I ovulating and can I get a flight at that time?
Yeah.
Then there's been COVID, you know.
It's really, really
quite
hard.
And clinics have been shut. And so because you can't just go whenever, you have to, you know, track your ovulation and then you've got life, you know, like, are you working?
Yeah.
Can you just drop everything and fly to, I don't know, Switzerland or somewhere?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult.
And that's why IUI is very different to IVF. Because with IVF, there's obviously a plan throughout the month and then you know exactly when it's happening and everything can be booked in and scheduled. But with IUI, it has to be at point of ovulation. And if you're going abroad to do it, yes, okay, logistically, a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. It's a nightmare.
But then it's so much cheaper as well.
Mm. And it's less expensive. Talk to us about the process of finding a sperm donor. Like, there'll be lots of people listening who might not have a clue how you'd even start that process. Yeah. So just tell us a little bit about that.
So we spent a year trying to find our sperm donor. It was crazy. So basically there are loads of websites online. Obviously, we were looking at ones that were UK eligible. Mm-hmm. And different websites have different criteria. And some websites, you pay a bit more money, you get more information. Mm-hmm. Some people want to have as little information as possible. Yeah. And honestly, it does make it an easier choice then. So some people are like, okay, you know, I just know I want someone who, you know, say... my partner is this race, so I'll get a donor that's this race, and I don't want to know anything else. Mm-hmm. And then some people are like, I want my donor to look exactly like my partner, so the baby looks like both of us, mm-hmm. as a couple. Yeah. You know, they have different criteria. So, so we start off looking at sperm banks which just had like pictures of babies. So you're like, okay, my baby might look like this baby. So you see the donor as a baby.
Oh, you see the donor as a baby. Not like they've made an image of what the baby might look like. No, okay.
No. What they do is they offer baby photos of that donor, but not adult photos. However, some sperm banks, if you pay a little more, like Rosie said, they offer like an extended profile. So what you get is essentially a photo shoot of them as an adult, which at first we were like, oh, do we care? And then we decided that we did because by having a little look at extended profiles, it goes to show that babies often change a lot. So you could get like a very specific looking baby and a very different looking adult.
Right,
wow. So we were like, right, we want to know as much. And then we fell down the rabbit hole of wanting to know everything, as much information as possible.
Mm-hmm. But what's crazy is you don't know what will be passed down to your child. Like some people might try and get like a certain look that might not translate into your child, right? And then so some people are like, okay, I want my child to be very intelligent, that's important to me. That again, you could get like a member of Mensa, but they won't,
it might, your baby might not be the same.
Exactly.
It's crazy. So you've got to think about the gene lottery. It is really like a real crazy random thing, but it took us a while.
And you mentioned sort of looking, a lot of people look for someone who would look like their partner. Mm-hmm. But I guess for the two of you, how did you go about making that decision? Because you didn't know who, like, it would be who would get pregnant, right?
That's such a good question. That's so true. So what we decided to do is try to find someone with really kind of like neutral features. So we found someone with no kind of like dominant, strong looking feature. We went for all kind of like, well, we had a few important things, like, you know, he's quite tall. He's really, what you also get with their profile is loads of questions about them, which is really nice because you get a real kind of feel for who they are as a person based on the answers that they give.
So we wanted a kind person.
We decided.
That's nice. I love that.
We actually picked our donor by their answers to their questions, and then we paid for more to see what they look like, and it was just a perfect match.
But some people don't sell themselves, because I remember we were looking at this one donor, and it was like, what's your worst trait? And he was like, I'm really aggressive and impatient. And we were like, I don't want you.
I choose you.
Yeah, like, it's so weird.
Yeah, I know.
And also it's funny what different clinics show different things. So like, or different sperm banks show different things. So like, I really wanted to know the donor's star sign.
I didn't care for this.
But they wouldn't tell me.
Why? I'd want to know the star sign.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Whereas some sperm banks do. They'll give you loads of stuff like that. So it's really weird.
Yeah. But what's crazy is, so we spent a year finding our perfect donor. We finally found our perfect donor. We went to the clinic like, great, let's have all the tests we need to do and then get going. We had all our tests. They were like, you're ready to go. And then they went, oh, sorry, we don't accept your sperm donor.
Why?
So they were like, our clinic doesn't work with that sperm bank. So they were like, so you have to go somewhere else or you have to choose a new sperm.
So basically they obviously had like a business relationship with another, like an exclusive business relationship with another sperm bank, which meant that then we had to change our clinic, and we had a really good clinic. So we were like, oh, for God's sake, this is so complicated, but it doesn't need to be.
And different clinics want you to have different tests and stuff. So some clinics are like, we want you to have a high COSI, which is they put dye in your fallopian tubes, check there's no blockages and stuff.
Both going through these tests.
That's it. We both did all the tests.
Yeah, I want to ask about that actually.
Because if you do IUI and your fallopian tubes are blocked, then the sperm's not going to go anywhere.
Right. So you're kind of wasting money.
So some clinics like do that, and it's a lot of money. And then some clinics like, no, you don't have to. So we were like, no, we won't, because if we were a heterosexual couple, we wouldn't spend that money right away. Maybe if we were trying and it wasn't happening, we might investigate further. So we said, no, we won't do that. And then a friend who was going through the same process said, I was told that if you have a high COSI, it triples your chances of pregnancy. So everyone tells you different information. It's so confusing working out what to do.
Yeah, it's been a ride.
I mean, we're getting a snippet of it, and it just feels very long-winded and quite conflicting. In certain, me and George are like, wow.
My mind is like,
yeah, the things that you have to think about and go through. And I guess there's the conversation taking place between the two of you about who is going to carry the baby.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was tricky too. Do you want to talk about that? Well, I decided to go first. So simply because I'm 2 years older than Rosie. So I thought, well, right. you know, I hate to say the biological, you know.
Yeah, clock. We hate that because we're real feminists that. And I believe that you shouldn't be pressured into a time. But equally, when you go to these clinics,
yeah.
they literally say TikTok.
They yeah, drum yeah, yeah. it in scary. They're like, you are, you know, not as young as you used to be.
They, pull, out, they pull out statistics and literally they're like charted. It kind of goes down yeah. and the, your chances as you get older. And so...
Yeah,
it's very scary.
Yeah, they do kind of like, you know, coerce you into getting started straight away.
How old are you both, just out of curiosity?
I'm turning 33 next month.
And I'll be turning 31. I was 30 when I fell pregnant.
God, isn't it yeah. mad that at 33, they're like, oh, tick, tick. You're like, oh God, I'm only 33.
I know. Oh yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, I was young.
I mean, I'm all for just doing what you want to do, you know, and having yeah. it all. But at the same time, you know, I also wanted my chances yeah. to be really, you know, optimal.
Yeah, right. which is, yeah, fair. Yeah, fair enough. Like if out of the two of you, like you say, you decided to go first yes. just because of your age.
Just because, yeah.
Exactly. That's all it was. And yeah, so I tried first. I got pregnant. Unfortunately, I lost that child. That was rubbish.
Oh. That was during lockdown as well. That was during the pandemic as well, in the height of the...
Yeah, it was a crazy stressful time. And then after that, I tried twice again because I was like, right, I've got the fear of God into me that I'm going to lose another one, but I've just got to get back on the horse and go for it. But it yeah. didn't take. And I was like, okay, we're running out of sperm. What's the best
thing to do? So because of COVID, we started running out of sperm because... our donor couldn't come in for the tests and stuff. They have to be tested regularly. Mm. And obviously you're not allowed to go in anywhere. And then also shipping the sperm. Yeah. So we were like, oh my God, you know,
yeah.
we're running out of sperm.
So I said, Rosie, why don't you just give it a try? And then second time, you were lucky and yeah. you got pregnant. And that's really it, isn't it?
But so. We actually just before I got pregnant, we decided to start taking it in turns because we realized that Rose's cycle's longer than mine. Mm. So most cycles, a typical cycle, but not everyone's the same, obviously. It's not an exact science. It's like, what, every 4 weeks,
every 4
right?
weeks, yeah.
You know, you'll ovulate and then 2 weeks later, you're either pregnant or you're not. Rose's cycle is a bit longer. Mm. She's about 6 weeks, yeah. just the way she is. Mm. And so we realized that I could... be inseminated with sperm, and in 2 weeks, if I wasn't pregnant, Rose would be ready.
Yes,
Rose could go, and we were like, double the chances each month. Let's do this.
Yeah,
and then I fell pregnant.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I'm not going to try now because I can't have two babies at the same time.
And how did yeah. that? Make, how did that make you feel?
I was thrilled, honestly, because I think having a miscarriage in lockdown was really quite difficult, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was difficult because I couldn't have anyone there when I went to A&E. I couldn't see my mum. This is another grievance I had. I wasn't told enough about what it means to have a miscarriage, like the physicalities of having a miscarriage.
And also there are procedures you can have when you have a miscarriage that I yeah. feel weren't
they weren't
to
available
because of COVID.
Right.
Because so, like the hospital was like cornered off. It was really bad. It was like yeah. filled with COVID.
I mean, mine was quite a nasty miscarriage, and I feel like if I'd have had slightly more information, then I would have been better prepared for how that would have yeah. gone.
There's a theme here about women not getting their information yeah. about Honestly, their bodies.
Yeah. And yeah. I know I keep talking about it, but like all the secrecy and the shame around having a miscarriage, mm. I don't get it. And mm. I didn't realize statistically it was so high.
No, yeah. we weren't prepared for that. I didn't yeah. realize that. I think the statistic was 1 in 3.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's changed now.
It's really high. And I was like, well, that won't happen to me, you know, because naively you just think, well, I got yeah. pregnant first time. I was like, great, so fertile.
Yeah.
and yeah, it did make me feel differently about carrying, and I don't know if I'll do that in the future now. I'm not really sure.
We're not sure.
We always have conversations around miscarriage and around, like you mm. mentioned there, the sort of historical shame that women are supposed to feel mm. around it. And actually, even mm. now with, you know, we're not supposed to tell people that we're pregnant until we're 12 weeks. Well, what happens if you mm. do miscarry in the first 12 weeks? Who are you supposed to talk to?
Exactly.
You know, who yeah. can exactly. share that with? It's got to be a personal thing. If you feel ready to tell the people in your life that you're pregnant at yeah, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, you go ahead and tell them, because if, God forbid, yeah, anything goes wrong, who's going to be there for you?
Exactly. It's almost a double blow to mm. say, oh, I was pregnant yeah. and now I'm not pregnant.
Yeah, like you've got to tell yeah. your family
you've
twice.
You've got to tell them twice yeah. and it's like, I was, but now I'm not. It's
also
hard.
We felt that, like, for example, no one sent us we did tell family very early, just very close family. And then no one sent us a card or anything because they were like, well, I'll just wait, you know, just
wait
in
till
case.
The 12 weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when Rose did lose the baby, she was like, well, they waited to send the card.
This baby,
but now I didn't have the baby and I don't have the card. You know, like when I did was pregnant, I feel like I should have celebrated it more.
Yeah.
I feel like I should have enjoyed it more.
Yeah.
Instead of being scared.
Yeah. I've never thought of that because actually sometimes I've had friends who will be like, don't buy anything for the baby until they're here. Mm-hmm. But actually, like you say, you still want to celebrate the pregnancy.
Yes, the journey.
Whether it, you know, yeah, exactly.
Totally. I mean, that baby still exists. You know,
you were still a pregnant, you were a mother, it happened.
Exactly. And I think also like the idea of, you know, this, the word miscarriage, like it kind of annoys me a bit because the way that it was explained to me was, oh, it'll be like a heavy period. And it just was not like that at all. It was really not like that. And I think, well, you know, you owe women more, you know, because, you know, it's quite scary to go through something. And I think that's why so many people that have miscarriages end up in A&E because they panic. They panic about the pain, how long it's going on for, and how much blood they're losing. And if they were just told what to expect, even though it's scary and I don't want to be like a fearmonger, you know, I think it's valuable.
Why are we not told, do you think?
Knowledge is power.
Why are we not told?
I don't know, but a person gave Rose a leaflet and it said, you may bleed. Like, you may experience bleeding. And it's like,
But what they don't tell you. Now, I appreciate that miscarriages are different for everybody.
That might be why they don't say.
Depending on how far along you are.
Yeah.
But I wasn't told that I was going to have contractions or like back-to-back contractions over like a few days. Mm-hmm. So when I had a contraction, I was like, what is this? There's something, I'm dying. So, if I'd have just prepared that, if someone had said to me, and as graphic as it is, you will pass what would have been your child, it wouldn't have been so traumatic to go through that. Because if I'd have just been told, look, you will pass the gestational sac, it may look like this and it will be this size, then I'll be like, okay, that sounds awful, but at least I know.
Yeah, you're prepared for it.
But when,
and also, if you think about it, I mean, I'm pregnant for the first time, I'm having antenatal classes and they're describing to me what labor's going to be like. Rose didn't know what labor was like. She hasn't been taught breathing exercises or what kind of sensation she may feel or how it may begin. And so she didn't have that knowledge. So when, you know, she was going through a contraction, if she'd have had that knowledge, she might have been like, oh, okay, this is fine. I know how to handle this.
And just to take the edge of the anxiety away as well, because then I wouldn't be like, is this normal? You know, do you know what I mean? So it was, I do feel like there should be more conversation about what it may be like without being a big fearmonger, because honestly, you know, knowledge is power at the end of the day and women deserve to know.
And you said that you don't know if you would necessarily, you know, try to get pregnant again. Is that because of what happened to you, or have you found, you know, has there been some information that you found out since?
Well, I've got polycystic ovary syndrome, which I didn't know before I started this journey. So for me, and now I've been told that in some cases, even though I've got a higher egg count, so I'm actually quite fertile, there is a slightly higher percentage that I may miscarry more than once. So for me, I don't know if I can emotionally deal with that. But also along this journey, I've also kind of come to realize that there is so much more to parenting than being biologically related to your child. I'm sure a lot of people will agree.
Absolutely.
You know, both Rosie's father figures have not, but I say both, she has a biological father and
my stepfather.
And both have just kind of
gone.
Abandoned you. And, you know, and I think, you know,
it's a big joke online.
We laugh. But Rosie's biological father has never been present in her life since she was three. And I just think to myself, you know, he is half of your genes and genetics. And
it doesn't matter.
Nothing to do with your life.
No.
And I just think, well, I will have everything to do with this baby's life. So I think for me, that might just be enough. You know,
And actually, being a stepmom, it's really nice to hear you say that, because I struggle sometimes, and it's not easy to say this, I guess, but I think, you know, I'm raising Isla. I've known her since she was 15 months old. I have no genetical link to her. When people ask me how many children I have, I say I have three, because she doesn't remember a time without me, but she has an amazing mum. So what am I, and what's my role? And I've talked about step parenting a lot, but I really hope that she turns around at some point during her life and say, do you know what, she's not linked to me genetically, but she's been such an incredible influence in my life and she's helped.
She will.
That's my mission. That's all I want, you know, because like you 100%. Said, it's like, okay, I'm not her parent, but I feel like
But it's nurture as well, isn't it? I mean, there's so much.
And being there.
There's so much to say for that. And 100% she will.
I hope so. Unless she calls me the wicked stepmother. It's like in the movie.
You've got too many good clothes for her to say that.
Yeah, exactly.
She needs to get you aside. Yeah, exactly.
We'll be right back after the short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So welcome back, back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Where were we?
So where are you now with your pregnancy? How are you feeling? How many weeks to go? And let's talk about birth plans and things like that.
Okay. Oh my God. So I'm 35 weeks pregnant. I have some serious acid reflux on the go. I just drink Gaviscon all day. That's all I do.
Your beverage of choice.
Yeah. I've got, about 5 weeks left. I'm 35 weeks pregnant, about 5 weeks left. And my birth plan is I really, really want to have a home birth.
Yes.
Maybe uncommon for first time.
Yes, it is.
But statistically, Rosie whipped out a statistic the other day.
I'll try and find them.
Whip it out now, Rosie.
It's a lot safer.
Yeah, I'll find them.
And we were talking about home births, and I think for my mum is kind of like, oh, you should have it in hospital because she's ultimate, you know, you've got to be safe, you've got to be safe. But actually, it turns out that lots of women who give birth at home, they don't have intervention. You know, they actually have really smooth births and it's a lot calmer. You're not in that sterile, stressful, strong, horrible lighting, harsh environment where people, strangers are walking in and out, which can often, you know, slow down labour because you're in a really stressful zone.
Here are the stats. So this is from the Positive Birth Company, who I'm doing hypnobirthing with. The stats are if you start having a home birth, so even if you end up in hospital with an emergency transfer, these stats still are the stats. So it's a 70% reduction in epidural use, 55% reduction in episiotomy, 40% reduction in cesarean birth, 50% reduction in instrumental birth, 60% reduction in oxytocin drip, 75% less likely to have postnatal infection, and 30% less likely to have a postpartum hemorrhage.
Wow. So that's quite high, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really high.
Do wonder as well if that this year, particularly, more people have looked into home birth because, I mean, I know that the restrictions have lifted with partners now, I think it was like as of last week.
Yep.
But I wonder if more people looked into home birth this year because they wanted their, but you know, birthing partner to be with them from the start. Yeah.
So you're absolutely right, because when I told my midwife I wanted a home birth, she said, right, well, normally you'd rent a birthing pool if that's what you wanted. Mm. But she was like, you might have to buy one because they're all sold out.
So it's true.
Loads of home births are happening. And I think that's incredible. And I think what I like about it is, I know like all women, you know, will learn about their birth and stuff, whether they have a hospital birth or not. But I feel like it's really taking the power into my hands by preparing myself, getting all the knowledge and saying, I can do this. I don't have to kind of go into hospital and say, hey, you look after me. I feel that kind of makes you more vulnerable.
Do you feel like, empowered, Tracy?
Obviously it's everyone else's choice. I'm not, you know, saying anything. There's anything wrong with hospital births, and I might end up in a hospital.
Sure. That's what I was going to say. You know that there's always the option.
George, do you wish? I really respect what you're saying. I love it. I love where you guys are at, actually. And I, in a way, feel slightly bereft, George. I don't know if you agree, but like, had I been told a bit more information about home births, or at least maybe, I don't blame the information, you know, during my pregnancy, but maybe if I'd grown up with a better conversation around me about, you know, hospital's great, but also home birth great, and let's get both sides of the track running together, I might have been able to go into it with a different decision, because I feel like I was just automatically programmed, or I'd program myself to go, oh no, it's better to be in hospital straight away as soon as the contractions start. And I was like, after 3 days, just like trying to watch episodes of Narcos, but having to deal with these bloody waves of surges.
I don't feel like... Were you given an option?
No.
I don't think with my first, like anyone, I mean, I would have said no. Like, I know I would have said no, but I don't think anyone even spoke to me about it.
They probably said,
like,
you want a home birth, and you went, no.
Mm. That's why it's so important that you're doing your podcast. That's why we need these shows with women talking about their experiences, because I guess it came from lots of women who felt like you, who were like, actually, I didn't have the choice, or why wasn't I given that information?
Or just even explore
to make a choice.
It.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Why did no one like present it to me to explore? Why did I think, oh, right, I go to hospital, the doctor takes care of me, that is how it's done. Mm. You know, we need to empower people.
Yeah,
you'd be surprised
as you know what you can achieve on your own. You know, during labour, I'm sure you know lots of women can actually, if given the time to just handle it and take control of their body, they can do it.
We've been doing it for millions of years. Yes. You know,
and I think there's this rush of, oh, we have to get the baby out now, and it's like, do you have to get it out right now though,
or can we just wait and see?
Or can we just see how it progresses?
And also historically, we've grown up watching stuff on television. You know, watching women. Very sadly dying during childbirth throughout the ages because they were giving birth at home without any, you know, any medical.
Right.
You know, that's what, they're the visions that I've grown up with. And I guess psychologically they've gone in and they've stayed there. And that's just not, just not the modern way. That's just not the case now. And actually somebody was saying, we had a discussion around hypnobirthing and they were saying, a lovely lady called Megan came on and she basically just said that, you know, being at home, you're just so much more relaxed. You get one-on-one care because you've got a dedicated midwife that's there with you the whole time, and then you have another midwife that comes, so you've got sort of two people
for the baby.
One for the baby, one for you.
I know, great.
Absolutely, it's crazy the stuff I learned. I really couldn't you know, big up hypnobirthing enough, because it was, I think from the outside it does sound really woo-woo, a bit like crazy hippie, you know, and I think people are a bit like, oh, you know, and I completely understand that, you know, it's your child and your life that you're worried about. And so, of course, you might think, right, well, in a hospital setting with professionals, you know, how can anything go wrong? Right. You know, I've got these people here. But yeah, the knowledge has truly been power. And I know this is way in the future, but I always think as well, like, I know nothing about menopause. Like, we've just never been taught anything.
I will tell you all about that, ladies. I'm in early menopause now.
I want to know. But this stuff isn't taught. You just go along with things.
Yeah.
The 26th, I'm hosting a perimenopausal summit. So a menopause summit. We're going to be discussing all about it. And I'm obviously in my 30s going through it. So yeah, you're right. In fact, Georgia and I discuss this all the time, that actually, you know, don't get pregnant, have a baby now, and when you're 50 odd, you're going to go through menopause, and can you just disappear now, and can you wear a really nice floral brow?
I know, and even when it comes to like getting pregnant in school, we were taught, if you have sex unprotected, you will be pregnant. And so when you're kind of like 30, you think, oh, it's so easy, I'll just have a baby whenever I want, because it's so easy to get pregnant, when actually there's a very specific time in the month and you may be lucky to get pregnant.
I didn't know that. And I also think that potentially a lot less women would be on birth control if they truly knew, you had to get pregnant, you have to have released an egg. You only release it at a certain time a month, and it can only be there for about 3 days maximum, and then it's gone. And so would we be taking pills every day and medicines or implants or whatever, you know?
I just think generally there just needs to be a bit more information about scientifically how things work, at what stage you are
in
your life.
Explain to the men as well.
Just going back to this kind of, you know, obviously kind of education and you know, how we kind of change the way that people think going forward. You're about to bring a baby into the world. You guys are a same-sex couple. Should there be more stuff in school about being in a same-sex relationship, about how you kind of figure out your feelings about whether you think you're gay, are you gay, are you not gay? I mean, there just doesn't seem to be any sort of caring around that.
I totally agree. And we're strong advocates for more LGBTQ+ sex ed in school. I think it's
more sex positivity in general.
Exactly. And I think it's just more, that's just common sense.
Well, things like, no one taught me about contraception for same-sex couples, right? I was like, oh, can I just not, like, how do I protect myself?
Right.
What am I supposed to do?
If I
go out in the world and sleep with women, I'm not using a condom. So
I won't get pregnant, so I'm fine. But actually, you know, there are other things too. But there's no kind of information, you know, at school around that. And I definitely think it's a conversation that needs to happen, for sure. I mean, I think sex education when I was in school was just appalling.
I'm sure it's a bit better now.
Yes.
And I'd like to think so.
Yeah. But also what's interesting about sex education is it's normally a teacher who teaches something else.
Yes.
And then they've also got to teach sex education. It's like,
yeah, I had a music teacher and he used to look so uncomfortable and so out of his comfort zone. And I was like, what's happening here?
I'm not saying that, you know, those teachers don't know anything about sex, but they're not an expert. And I think should it just be an English teacher or a music teacher saying, right, this is the curriculum and I'm just kind of going through this? Or should it be, you know, maybe a nurse or someone who... Yeah. truly understands.
Yeah, or getting like a sex and relationship expert in. You know, there's so I don't know if that happens now. Does that happen now, George? We don't you got a cousin that's at school.
Yeah, I have got a cousin. I mean, she barely would speak to me, so we don't know. She's not gonna give me the ins and outs of sex education. But also, like you said, you know, ways of getting pregnant, you know, there's so many different routes to being a parent now, and how, you know, for same-sex parents, also people who struggle with fertility, adoption, you know, surrogacy, all of those things. If we were taught those in school, if we were taught that in school, then hopefully, you know, the people who are working in those fertility clinics, when they pick up the phone, they're not going to assume that it's a heterosexual couple on the other end of the line. You know, they're going to know it's going to be instilled in them that there's all, you know, that there's all these different routes to getting pregnant, and it's not just because of a fertility issue that someone's 100%. Gonna be,
there are all types
and
of families.
It's so funny because I remember we spoke to a transgender person on our podcast, and they said that when they went to the doctors to talk about like gender reassignment surgery, no one ever mentioned fertility, and they were female to male, and I would have thought that you'd go in and they'd say, right, well, you might want to think about freezing your eggs before you have this operation,
if you that's know, something
if,
that's
if it's something that's interested in, that you're interested in, just to bank for the future. And there was no discussions, and it's like, what's everyone doing? I feel like I need to go and do everyone's jobs for them. You know?
It's crazy.
More information is
needed. But as you said, it's a lack of education. And I don't mean that. I mean that in very much like we were all brought up in that sort of, you know, anybody that's between sort of 30 and 40 in that sort of generation of teaching, that old school version of learning. And we're really lucky in a way that our kids, you know, I know we talk about sort of, oh, social media this and it can be so dangerous, but actually how incredible that that space can be there to educate our children a little bit more, and hopefully we're changing the way for them now so that these conversations don't seem like you know, we don't have to keep banging the drum so loudly about them.
Exactly. And the information's out there. Like, I wonder how many couples you've helped along, you know, their pregnancy journey. Probably, you know, millions of people.
I hope so. I mean, this is what we're trying to do on our podcast. You know, we're talking to people as well from very different walks of life. You know, it takes all sorts to have a family. There's not one prescribed way to be a parent, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just think that general awareness of that topic is really important.
Yeah. I was just shocked that, I mean, this might exist, but I definitely haven't come across it. But I just thought when I like Googled like, oh, how to have a baby as a same-sex couple, I thought there would be like maybe a website that would kind of like give me some steps, like a WikiHow.
Just the basics, just the basics.
But yeah, it's just...
Madness. It's just
well, you can add that to your list of things to do. Like, you've got 5 weeks to set it up before the baby comes. Get busy.
All right, let's buy a domain.
Do it,
Ladies, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to have to say goodbye, but it has been an absolute treat to chat to you. Where can people find you?
Well, they can find us on YouTube. It's Rose and Rosie.
Yeah, just search Rose and Rosie.
And then our podcast is called Rose and Rosie Parental Guidance, and it's available on Spotify.
Yep.
Fab.
We had so much fun talking to you. I just love it. I think... I find it really empowering. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having us.
And us too. Lots of love. Good luck with the birth. Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Oh, I love them. They have got so much energy.
Yeah.
I mean... Wow. What a great story as well. I love it. I mean, it still blows my mind that people come up against these conversations with fertility clinics and, you know, the sweeping generalizations that when, you know, someone at that clinic picks up the phone, they assume it's a heterosexual couple having fertility problems. That does blow my mind that still happens. But as we said, I think it's all about, you know, us making a change now, isn't it? We can't, I guess, dwell on what is right now. We just need to work out how we can make it better.
Yeah, actually, and you know what? My two good mates, Lucy and Yvonne, I've spoken about them before. I remember getting a message from Yvonne saying, you know, I love listening to your podcast and da da da, but I think sometimes you can, and like this, you know, she was just being very honest. She said sometimes you can reference, you know, husbands or, you know, old dads and stuff. And that's, you know, you and I made a real conscious effort to then say partners across it, because in my head, it doesn't look man, woman. It doesn't look woman, man. It looks anybody. But we're obviously programmed as a society. That's just that's just what comes out. And I want to say thank you to Yvonne, because that was noted. Very noted.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And also, I guess we, you know, we can only speak from our own personal experiences. Mm. And that's why we invite people who have completely different journeys onto the podcast, so that we do get, you know, a broad spectrum of, you know, how life is as a parent, what, you know, whoever you are. And that's what we want to continue doing, because it's also just really interesting as well, you know, even if we're not going through something like that ourselves, I find it fascinating.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah,
it was brilliant. Massive thank you to Rosie. Yes, exactly. Now, before we say goodbye this week, there is something else that I'm working on at the moment that I wanted to share with everybody listening. So, as you know, my parents have got a charity in Kenya. It's called the Vipingo Village Fund. And in the last kind of 6 months, I've been having like emergency meetings over Zoom with my mum about how little money the charity have. Now, my parents started this about 15 years ago out of a mud hut. It's right on the coast in Kenya, and they started renting this mud hut for 20 of the most vulnerable children in the county of Vipingo. And then over the last 15 years, the school has grown and grown and grown, and my mum now looks after 200 children. They're either, I know, she's such a powerhouse, this woman. They're either infected or affected directly by HIV and AIDS, so either they have it themselves, or they've lost one or both parents and a relative is sort of bringing them up. And they literally have nothing. I mean, these kids have nothing, the poorest of the poor. And when I last spoke to my mum sort of in depth about it, she told me that she'd lost two of her biggest donors. She has to find £150,000 a year to keep the school going. And she's on her own now, obviously, because she's not, you know, dad's not around. So I just basically said that I would try and raise some money for her and the kids, obviously. And I'm hosting an event which is taking place at the Albright, which is in Mayfair in London on the 20th.
Yeah, it's one of our favourite spots.
We love it.
Yeah. Wonderful place to go.
We love it. On Friday the 25th of June at 9:30, it's a panel talk, which I'm hosting. Ola Pelavangu is going to be on the panel with me. Caroline Britton, who we've also had on the podcast, and Ashley James is Made by Mama's podcast lineup. We're going to be talking about the mama identity. Tickets are being sold for £25. And I would absolutely love anybody listening to come and join in. 100% of those profits, aside from the breakfast that we're providing, is going directly to the kids.
And how can people get tickets though?
So I'm going to do a swipe up. It's going to be on Made by Mama's page and my own page, and there's also a page there to donate. So if you head over to our Instagram, you can find out all of those details. If you'd love to be there on the morning, of course you're welcome to bring baby, and then if you can't be there, a donation would be much appreciated. Thank you.
I will be there with Gigi probably.
Yes.
I'll make sure she's on her best behaviour. But yeah, it'll be really good to see everyone there.
She's too much of a diva.
She'll only have smoked salmon if it's from a certain shop.
All right. Thank you. As always, we'd love you to rate, review and subscribe or follow the podcast.
Yeah, and any suggestions for guests, please keep them coming, because we do read every single one. We put it to our producer. We try and get the dates in. So even if it feels like you've made loads of suggestions and we're not getting those people on, we are actually trying. It's surprisingly hard to get, you know, all diaries together and match up. So please keep your suggestions coming. Just drop us a DM at Made by Mamas or on Zoe's channel at Zoe Hardman, and we will be back on Friday.
See you then.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.